Welcome to Everything EV Podcast from EV Powered. I'm Matt Allen, editor of EV Powered, and on today's episode, I'm talking to David Watson, founder and CEO of Ohme Home Charging. Ohme has rapidly become a major player in the home charging world, with a growing number of car makers and retailers partnering with the brand, recommending its smart charging solutions. So I spoke to David about the company's origins, how it's attracted the attention of so many major brands, and the key role that smart home charging has to play as more and more drivers switch to electric cars. Now, Ohme's success is clearly linked to how your devices integrate with smart charging, and I'd like to get onto that shortly. But first, can you just explain a bit about your own background and about Ohme, how it came about, background of the company?
Okay, thanks for having me. I started in the energy system when I ran an investment firm, Horus Capital, and that firm was focused on the renewable energy space. So we built, owned, and managed renewable energy projects, wind, solar, hydro, waste to energy on behalf of our investors. And in the early days, it was all about how to, you know, just build these projects, and they were eligible for government subsidies. However, as more and more renewable energy projects were on the grid, energy prices were becoming more and more volatile, and I was beginning to get worried about what that volatility may do to the grid, or may, what it may do to those projects. So I started looking at batteries, and I don't know if you've seen or ever read about, initially, Elon Musk had a huge battery farm in South Australia. That was where some of the most volatile energy prices were, and he built this big battery farm to effectively help manage energy volatility, i.e. when there was too much electricity on the grid, the batteries would absorb all of that, and when there wasn't enough of energy on the grid, it would feed it back into the grid. So those batteries were there to effectively balance the system. So I started looking at those. This is about 2016 and 17 as a way of potentially balancing the peaks and troughs of energy that resulted with wind and solar. And when I looked closely, I could see that batteries were on a price reduction trajectory. And I thought to myself, well, what would the future look like if we continue to have more and more renewables and battery prices dropped? And again, the conclusion I came to is that EVs would be the mass form of transport much, much quicker than people thought. And then I thought, well, cars are parked 95% or 90% of the time at work or at home. So I thought you could use those batteries to effectively balance the grid. So I was like, well, that was the idea for Ohme. And then we thought, how could we make that happen? So the first thing we did is we invented the smart cable. So the first Ohme that ever came out was a smart cable with a 4G chip in it that could effectively talk to our cloud. You could plug it into your car, you plug it into your house, and you could charge your vehicle. And then the Ohme would speak to the grid operator and try and figure out what the cheapest times of energy were and send that schedule to the charger, which would effectively smart charge. That was the idea. So we set that up, and luckily for us, bumped into Greg Jackson at Octopus when they were a relatively new small energy supplier, and they had a Octopus Go, which was cheaper at, you know, 1 o'clock to 4 in the morning, cheaper energy, 5p a kilowatt hour at the time. And so until that stage, people used to get up in the middle of the night to set the timer in their car. There wasn't even timers or delayed timers in the car. And now we brought along this Ohme cable, which would effectively turn on and off charging at the time that it was cheapest. And so people who had the first Ohmes and had Octopus's earliest tariffs would ultimately be able to charge at 5p a kilowatt hour, which was at that stage about quarter the price of normal electricity. And so you could effectively run your car for about £150 a year, which was a huge saving. So that was kind of the first thing. And then I guess with Octopus and us moved on to Agile, which was a much more dynamic tariff that was effectively linked to energy prices. So when energy prices were high, prices were higher. And when energy prices were low, when there was a lot of wind and solar on the grid, then prices would get low. And then drivers who had Agile would effectively benefit from Ohme charging at those cheaper times. Now, in 2020, lockdown came. Electricity demand went down, dropped massively because everyone was at home, not working. And on one windy spring weekend that was nice and sunny, there was an oversupply of energy, low demand, and prices went negative. And we, with our Ohme, ultimately ended up charging, or people got paid to charge. So the prices were negative and people got charged to fill the car. And so we had a little bit of fun, you know, posting about people getting paid £5 to fill their car. So that was where we started, and that was the first version of a smart grid as to where you could use your electric vehicle to charge when there was an oversupply of energy on the grid and effectively pass on all of those benefits onto the customers. You kind of had this thing where you were balancing the grid, but also allowing consumers or customers to have this super cheap energy. And so I guess it was a fast forward to what the world might look like in the future when there was way more renewables on the grid, because that was an artificial moment in time. So that was all me. And that's how we started, and that's the first really cool, the cool thing we did. And from then it was, how do we scale? How do we move beyond early adopters and people who were really, really engaged in energy and who understood smart energy, and how could we build a proposition that worked for everybody, and how could we bring everybody else on that journey?
So I think that's one of the important things is early adopters tend to be very savvy about how these things work. They want to learn, they want to know about all of it. Whereas now, as you say, we're around sort of mass EV adoption now, where people are maybe less enthusiastic about the nitty-gritty and the details. So how do you provide for people who just want to be able to plug the car in, get the cheapest tariff, not have to worry too much about tracking prices and things?
You know, we did focus on the early adopters at the start, and that was good because they were a fast forward into what the future looked like. But we started talking to a company called Motability that effectively leased vehicles on behalf of disabled people, and they were struggling with the whole charging experience. One, the installation of a charger, and two, the end life of managing and controlling a charger. So I began to realize, or we began to realize, actually, instead of talking about really smart energy and really appealing to the early adopters, we had to refocus on building some tools and systems to allow us to bring, I would say, less technologically engaged people into it. So we started focusing on how we could make energy cheap, reliable, and easy for people to access. So the emphasis of the company changed. I know they seem like just words, but it actually, once you really think about that, it kind of pervades everything you do. So yeah, it started on the installation process for those guys and trying to make that whole process of getting an EV charger easy for a whole range of people. And there's a big dispersion of people that are in there across, you know, both in terms of disability and socioeconomic stuff and their ability to be able to manage technology. So we had to really, really look at that process of installation, how we could make it easy, and start to think about our app and think about how we could communicate the message of cheaper energy. So there was a number of things that we did. You focus on your app. You focus on your communication, focus on language, focus on all the help around it. You have your help desk, and there's all sorts of things you need to do it. And funnily enough, when you moved beyond the early adopters, people weren't as engaged initially on into smart energy. They weren't even aware when they got their EV, or they get their EV, that there was these energy tariffs and how they work. So one of the biggest barriers was effectively education and simplifying the message and repeating that message all the time. Because within the community of people that we knew, everybody knew that this cheap energy was available if you use specific hardware and software. There, you know, some of the initial tariffs were easier to integrate with. So they were, you know, like Go, which was simply effectively a timer, a period in time. It was easier to just turn on and off your car. So explaining what that thing was a lot easier. But the energy markets have kind of evolved a bit with Ukraine and stuff. You saw that energy prices got more volatile, they got more expensive. So in order to pass cheaper energy on to customers, both us and the energy supplier, and Octopus Nova in particular, had to work a lot harder in order to be able to deliver that cheap energy. What do I mean by having to work harder? They had to help manage the load around in a much more dynamic way. So instead of just saying it was going to be cheap every evening from 1 to 3, they might know one evening it might be cheap in the afternoon, another day in the evening. And then they also wanted to understand exactly how much energy they were going to be delivered, you know, in terms of when the EVs were charged, because that would allow the energy supplier to be balanced, because there's a penalty for being imbalanced. So that was effectively the birth of another tariff, which seems simple on the outside, intelligent Octopus and Droid Value Timer, another form of tariff. They're more like a type of, they're called type of use. So ultimately, instead of being cheap at a period of time, it could be any time. But in return, we had to integrate much more closely with it, our software in the back end. I didn't integrate much more closely with Octopus. And then, but on the front end, you have a whole host of users now, or not users, drivers, that are becoming less sophisticated technologically wise, not understanding how it is. So we had to work hard on communicating it. So just as I think, just as we were moving from early adopters who understood sophistication, we were moving to early majority that were less sophisticated at the same time that the smart energy piece was getting more complicated. And that's been the biggest challenge, because you still have the early adopters who want all the newer features and tech and all the things that they do need. But actually delivering cheap, reliable energy at scale when you have a big dispersion of drivers is a very, very hard proposition.
Actually, on that topic, then maybe for some of our listeners who maybe are just new to EV ownership or who are considering EV ownership, can you just explain in sort of simple terms what dynamic charging, smart charging actually is, what it involves?
Okay, so what it basically means is, so a typical driver will come home at 5 in the afternoon and plug in their car and will typically unplug the car at 8 in the morning. So if you don't know anything about the driver and the driver doesn't put any information into the system, all that the charger can do is assume that it charges at max. So literally at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, your car would charge at max charge. But if the true an app that the customer would say, well, I would like to be 80% full at 9 a.m., then you could figure out, or we could figure out, well, actually, the car is 60% full and at 5 o'clock, and they want to be 80% full at 8 in the morning. That 20%, which is only about 3 hours charging, depending on the size of the car, maybe 2.5 hours charging, could be at any time between 5 and 8. So when what time do you pick? You pick the time that energy's cheapest. So if an energy supplier has decided that it's cheap in the middle of the night for a few hours, then ultimately then because you know what the customer wants to do, you can move that charging to that charge to the time when energy's cheapest, then the customer benefits from it. And that difference in timing or a difference in price is usually driven by supply and demand. So at the very heart of it, you either have less demand because it's the middle of the night, or more supply because there's a lot more renewable energy on the grid than is expected. So the two of those things actually drive the whole thing. So that's what a dynamic or smart charging is doing, is effectively moving away from that system where the system knows nothing about the driver and assumes just charge as fast as you can, to one where you know exactly how much is in the car, how much they want in the car, and when they want it ready by. You also know what energy supplier they have, and that energy supplier has said that electricity will be cheaper or more expensive at different times. And then the OEM would do the calculations, figure out what was the best time for the customer, and then charge. And so you end up as a driver at the cheapest energy. And now, as I said, I guess I earlier on I jumped a bit too quickly onto more sophisticated versions of smart charging, but that is very hard. That is the simplest form of smart or dynamic charging. And the benefits of that for a typical customer would typically mean that you would charge for a couple hundred quid a year rather than on a dumb charging or a one which you charge a max charge could be 700 or 800 pounds a year, maybe even 1,000. And when energy prices were really high, or when they were even higher 18 months ago, 12 months ago, that could have been even 1,200 or 1,300 pounds a year to fill your car. Whereas the tariffs that were available in the smart car tariffs at the same time would have allowed you to fill your car up for a year, a whole year, for £200. So the benefits of just using smarter technology allow basically capitalize on the fact that you don't need to max charge, you don't need to fill your car as soon as it's plugged in. You only need to, you know, you have three that you only need 3.5 hours of charging. So the system effectively picks what's best for you. So that is that a
That's really helpful. That's a really useful sort of overview. And obviously, from an OMI point of view, it's your devices manage all of that. They talk to the car. They talk to the
So we
grid
just
system
make it
power
easy.
supplies.
So you would just set in, you know, from a customer's point of view, you would just tell us what you want, a bit like, I want to get up at 8 in the morning, a bit like your alarm. I want to wake up at 8. You'd say the same thing as you'd set your preferences and say, I just want to be 80% full at Monday to Friday. And then you plug in your car and OMI would do the rest. I mean, initially when you get your charger or you have your energy supplier, you'd have to tell us what energy supplier you had, whether it was Centrica, whether it was OVO, whether it was Octopus, and what particular tariff you were on, or which energy bundle you particularly had. Once OMI knew that, it can speak to Octopus or speak to OVO, speak to the car. It knows what your preferences are, and then you just sit back and charge at a much cheaper rate.
It's interesting you mentioned there about the energy prices and how 18 months ago they were through the roof and they've started to come down. And I know about 18 months ago or so, it was impossible to find an EV specific or a time of day tariff. Nobody was offering them if you hadn't previously signed up. And now prices are dropping. They look like they're going to continue to drop for a little while. And we've seen a few more coming about. Do you think that's something we're going to see further? Obviously, Octopus and OVO, as you mentioned, are probably the two that offer the most flexible rates at the moment. Do you think we're going to see more energy suppliers follow suit, bring more time of day or more flexible tariffs to market soon?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, that inability to switch in the past was driven by, or in that period of time was driven in by the price gaps that was ultimately loss-making for an energy supplier to have a customer. So allowing customers to move and switch to any tariff would mean you were going to put more losing customers on because of the nature and form of the market. So that was one of those points in time where the market was kind of in an artificial state. But now that energy prices have normalized and energy suppliers can make a return on customers, then they're clearly actively looking for more customers. And the extension of that is clearly EV drivers or people who charge their car end up consuming twice as much energy as a normal customer. So there's a potential for the energy supplier to ultimately make more money or generate a positive return. So there's big incentive to create special tariffs. And then if like anything else, if Octopus and OVO have interesting tariffs, then other energy suppliers such as will follow suit and create them. And we're already seeing Centrica have some interesting ones, and so ADF and the likes are bringing out more and more tariffs, and even the energy suppliers will make things differently. So we'll see more. We'll definitely see the emergence of more players and more competition, which will give customers ultimately more choice.
From a hardware point of view, do you expect that then to mean that OMI is going to see more challengers with the same level of complexity and same level of smart chargers?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I'd expect it would, because ultimately the customers ultimately demand more. They demand that they ultimately want access to the cheaper energy. As I said before, the technology that's required in order to deliver that cheaper energy has evolved. So rather than a simple timer or something that just moved with a predefined energy price, we now have a much closer handshake between the energy supplier and the hardware provider in order to deliver that cheaper energy. And so we were the first to do that, and I guess Octopus and then followed by OVO were the next companies to move that, and the other energy suppliers are moving to that basis. So we're seeing some of our competitors begin integrating with one or two and starting to move along in that direction. However, I mean, ultimately, as the next phase of as evolution involves a degree of flexibility. So you might have seen some trials at Winterflex trials, and there's another one, Crowdflex, we're doing, which are trying to move to the next level where customers change their preferences or provide or do different things at times when the grid is under immense stress. So let's say in the winter where you have a shortage of energy because it's cold winter's night, low wind, you get energy crunches. And so in those periods of time, the grid operator has the, would historically have called on backup generation to turn on and provide electricity quite expensively. So now they're exploring new markets where they would, people who wanted to charge would not charge, or they would change their behavior, and there'd be additional revenue for customers or drivers who participated in that. So the market is evolving even further than just looking at supplier requirements. It's moving towards system services in order to generate more value from that flexibility that the car drivers have. So it's kind of a bit of, I'm going to say, an arms race thing. It's, you move to the level of intelligence, and then the system is now moving to create new markets or new services that unlock more and more of the flexibility that exists in your EV. And by doing that, then we have to create different integrations or different pieces of technology which would then mean in order to, I guess, catch up or at least stay ahead of the curve, other competitors would have to move beyond what's currently required to provide best value for the customers. So that's fair. But look, ultimately, being integrated with these energy tariffs is definitely one hurdle, but the next one is actually how do you make sure those customers have a great experience? And I think that's the bigger barrier than simply technologically integrating a piece of hardware and saying, yes, I can turn on and off the charger whenever I need to do it, but can you actually make that service really easy and reliable for large numbers of people and who are very, very different? I think that is for us the more challenging problem to solve.
It's, again, it's part of the education, the part of the making EVs
Exactly.
simple and straightforward for people to use. That's going to be what helps attract more
Yeah,
people to
but I mean,
EVs.
ultimately, if you come out and your car isn't charged in the morning, you can't go to work, you can't go to school because somebody's been turning it on and off to try and optimize your energy. You can lose confidence in that system very quickly. So ultimately, you have to not just make it easy and not just turn it on, but reliably be able to do that and have backups and stuff in order for the customer to be able to get what they need. And as I said, that's so bringing people who are not early adopters on a journey, one, making it easier for them to use, but then it has to be reliable and they have to trust the system, they have to believe it because that is part of that. That is the next phase. I mean, we still have a job to do to bring still bring people on a journey of realizing there are these tariffs and charging and driving an EV isn't. Now, look, it's a different story for people who don't have off-street parking, and that's a broader and tougher conversation. But for the people who are lucky enough to have off-street parking, there's still a large number of those that are not charging or not using the right tariffs are the ones that will allow them to have the cheapest energy.
Yeah, just as you go back, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago there about flexibility, about the way that technology is changing and how suppliers, manufacturers of charging devices are going to adapt to that and what the potential there is there. And earlier on, you also mentioned the idea of battery storage and of balancing the grid. I noticed a few weeks ago, Octopus obviously announced that they were launching their first vehicle at the grid tariff. Renault have announced that the Renault 5 is going to have AC vehicle to grid bi-directional capabilities. Škoda came out this morning, in fact, and said the same thing about their next EV. So do you think that's going to play a part as well as meters that are smarter and that can manage different tariffs? Do you think people being able to use their vehicles to feed back into the grid at time is going to be a part of the future landscape?
I mean, ultimately it will be, but before it becomes a mass market proposition, I mean, lots of things need to change. I mean, I think as I said to you there, it's already a challenge to get relatively, a high level of coverage of smart charging where customers can unlock £600 or £700 a year by simply moving energy supplier and engaging with a tariff that exists in a box on a piece of hardware system that can be installed for about £1,000. On the V2G world, you have if you look at DC V2G, you have a piece of kit that could be anywhere from 5 to, I mean, 7 or 8 grand that goes into a house that needs quite a sophisticated user with a very uncertain payout, where the technology is not really support. I mean, it's only beginning to be supported by car OEMs and as you said, the release of a tariff. So that's a long way away from a mass market product. Now, I think the AC V2G had the potential to unlock the world in a different way, because ultimately an AC V2G charger is set up is much cheaper to install. It's pretty a little bit more expensive than a normal single way charger, but not in the same thing as DC. But we do need car manufacturers to support it, and then those supported technologies to actually be, on an AC V2G. If the car company has to, let's say, as you said, Renault, they would have to support a French variant and a UK variant, and a Irish variant, because the grid codes are different in each of the countries. So they have to have a different car for each country. So when they come out and say they're going to have an AC code, then is that when are they going to have the UK version from that? So ultimately, it's a long way for me to say that, look, V2G will in the future play an important part, but presently there are quite a lot of barriers, whether they're regulatory and technological or financial or even user experience, to making it a mass market proposition.
So it's probably fairly safe to say that VTG isn't on your immediate horizon for OMI.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we have technology in our pipeline, but it's not something that I think is going to have a massive impact on what we do in the next year or two.
So in that case, what is next for OMI? What does 2024 have in
Well,
store?
I guess we don't feel it here, but the UK is quite fortunate in that it's a good number of years ahead of the rest of the curve, the rest of the world, in terms of smart energy and smart tariffs and an open energy system. So So drivers here in the UK have been fortunate to have access to super cheap energy and technology providers such as Omie to allow them to have really cheap energy. But that hasn't really existed in the continent, in Europe and more broadly, for a number of reasons, but that's not how the market evolved. And as we've seen more and more renewables on the grid and increased price volatility over the last couple of years with Ukraine, then energy suppliers and people in the UK, energy prices are volatile, and then energy suppliers are starting to introduce, and policymakers are starting to introduce more incentives and drivers to push towards a more flexible system. So the net effect is that our focus over the next 12 months are certainly going to be it's going to be expansion into Europe and Australia in the next 12 months. That's where all our focus is.
You mentioned there that the sort of different markets, different systems. So does that bring unique challenges for each market?
And you have some hardware. So we have a single phase grid here. We have three phase grid in Europe. We have some other funky grid varieties that are in smaller areas. So that's one differential. You have regulatory, slightly different regulatory misalignments. So you have to, for example, in France, you have to have a special shutter in your untethered chargers. You can't use a normal untethered. So it's called a T2S. So you have to do that. So you've got some hardware and regulatory pieces. The converse is if you the UK had the smart regs and the smart regs here in the UK, so made it harder for international players to come in here because they had to specifically up their hardware criteria in order to come in because that was ahead. So in some respects, parts of it are more advanced. Then you then have, I guess, the energy supply ecosystem, and the fact that some of those, those new tariffs and the agile type tariffs, so that, as I said, that was kind of the second evolution of smart tariffs in the UK, are actually starting to emerge in Benelux of all places, I don't mean of all places, but in Belgium and Holland, because of quite volatile energy supplies. So we've seen the emergence of new suppliers. So that's helpful to us because I think if we were to move into Europe a year or two ago, nobody was talking about smart energy, smart tariff. Prices of energy were relatively flat. So our ability to differentiate ourselves was quite different. So now that, I guess, that evolution of the thing, there are complexities because it's new energy suppliers. The forms of the energy tariffs are not exactly the same. We have to deal with language and things. But ultimately, the structure is the same. A driver comes, they come home at evening, they tell you what they want in the morning. The app might be German, French, or Dutch, but in effect, they're just passing you instructions. You're communicating to their energy supplier. You're finding out what the cheapest times, and you're moving the load around. So ultimately, there's so much more the same than different. That means you can move on and replicate it. Octopus are also expanding quite quickly into Europe, so that's quite helpful. They're looking at, or they have released and begin to are releasing tariffs all over different countries of Europe in Europe, and we're partnering with them in those countries to do the same things as we've done here, which is quite exciting for us and them to be able to, I guess, export the learnings that we've had together over the last 3 or 4 years and show all the and I guess give people in other countries access to some of the things that EV drivers over here would have taken advantage of. I do remember in some of the early days when people would be on Twitter or on Twitter going kind of begging and saying, when are you going to come to X, Y, and Z country, because we're paying 30p or 40p a kilowatt hour for or cents at that stage for kilowatt hour for energy. So I think there's more to say. I mean, there are things that we have to change, but from our perspective, there are more similarities than differences.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got plenty in your plate, plenty to be keeping you busy. So I've probably taken up enough of your time. Thank you again for joining me. It's been really insightful. Really good to hear from you.
Thanks, Matt. It was great to be on.
Basically, thanks very much, David. If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review.